Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Catholic leaders return from a visit to the Holy Land, urging the international community to seize the opportunity for peace in the region. And Pope Benedict's words on the search for truth in faith and science. The Vatican releases the speech that the Pope was due to give before his visit to Rome's La Sapienza University was cancelled. Following a meeting with top Vatican officials, bishops from Europe, America and Canada who've just returned from a pastoral visit to the Holy Land are calling on the international community to seize what they call this moment of opportunity and of danger. After talking to both Israeli and Palestinian officials in Jerusalem and Ramallah, just days after US President George Bush toured the region, the bishops say they're convinced it's a crucial moment for Israel, Palestine and the international community. Coming from different countries across Europe and North America, they say we must examine our own nation's attitudes and policies to see what has contributed to division in this troubled region. Too often, they say, countries have taken sides in the dispute, when in fact the fate of Israel and Palestine is inextricably linked.
Our nations can at times be part of the problem, but they can also be part of the solution.
Bishop William Kenny, Auxiliary of Birmingham in the UK, was moderator of this Holy Land coordination team, which has made an annual visit to the region for the past 8 years. Reading from a statement at the conclusion of their 5-day visit, he says the bishops saw many signs of hope and commitment, but they also witnessed signs of discouragement and division.
The separation wall through which we passed was a vivid reminder of the security concerns of Israel, as well as the deepening division between Israelis and Palestinians who lack human contact that can help foster justice and reconciliation. We heard moving stories of how the wall compounds suffering and compromises human dignity by separating families, devastating the Palestinian economy, and exacerbating the humanitarian crisis. We are particularly concerned for the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza, which has worsened since we visited there a year ago. We recognize that the social, political, and humanitarian situation in Israel and Palestine is complex, and that solutions to the conflict are not easily found.
So it depends whether you're speaking to a Palestinian Christian or a Palestinian Muslim or an Israeli Jew or an Israeli Christian. You get slightly different perspectives on the situation because they're living different realities.
Taking part in the Holy Land coordination meeting for the first time as head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops was Cardinal Francis George of Chicago.
But all of them are concerned about having peace in their society. No one wants to see their children go off to war. However, the way to find peace remains difficult to discover.
As you say, it's largely a question here of perception, isn't it? It's difficult to get away from the perception that you're either pro-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. And one of the problems, perhaps, with the United States is so often seen as an ally, if you like, of Israel in the fight against terror, pro-Israeli, and therefore finding it very difficult to end the occupation, which Palestinians would see as the first prerequisite for bringing peace to this country.
The perception of the United States is not entirely false, but it is more complicated than that. If you take a look at the statements of the U.S. government over the decades, they've always been in favor of a state for the Palestinian people. However, they're also quite concerned that there are people in Palestine and elsewhere who would deny the existence of the State of Israel, and that is non-negotiable for the United States as it is for the Israelis. So the question then is, how can two peoples who are living cheek by jowl share this land in peace in two different states? That's been the American goal. The problem is compounded when the Palestinians have such an extreme difficulty in governing the territories that they have, a difficulty that they would say is caused by the Israeli occupation. But it's very complex on the ground. Nonetheless, in a general way, I suppose that is certainly part of the truth.
Do you see the goal of achieving this two-state solution any closer since President Bush's recent visit here to the region?
Well, officially, everyone has responded with the statement that they're going to try. Unofficially, I think there's a lot of skepticism, but anything that brings some kind of hope is something we should all pursue and pray for.
As you say, on the ground, though, there is a lot of skepticism, isn't there? What else, perhaps, can the United States do, government and people, to try and prove that it is really serious in this effort?
Well, I think we have to stay with it, but you have to have somebody to stay with. If there is to be peace here, it has to be peace among the people who are here. And while the United States certainly has a lot of influence in many ways, it doesn't govern Israel or Palestine. And so it is up to the people here. Whoever, as President Bush said, he's tried to give a mighty nudge, and I hope he's successful, and we should all pray that he is, because the alternative is that we run out of time for a two-state solution, and then the result will be more violence and perhaps chaos.
At the conclusion of their visit to Jerusalem, the bishops met with top Vatican officials, including Secretary of State Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, to discuss the problems facing the Catholic Church in the region. Also taking part in this meeting for the first time was Irish Cardinal Sean Brady, who was struck by the signs of hope he found despite the daily difficulties and economic hardships experienced by most of the Palestinian people.
The desire for peace, for example, which we found in many, many hearts in many places, especially among the young people. The beginnings of dialogue, we were very heartened to know that last Monday the representatives of the Palestinian authorities and the Israeli government sat down to talk face-to-face in a hotel in Jerusalem. The plans which have been announced by President Bush last week, his visit also gives heart, and people have been assessing those plans and seeing what is substantial there. Also, the indication of willingness to make territorial concessions. These are all signs of hope. I think we must point those up, and we went there to learn, to accompany the local church with our prayers, with our interest, to encourage other people to go there. And that's what happened over 3-4 days. We visited, we listened to people on the ground, clergy and laity, people in public life, people in private life. We went to parishes, we went to the holy places, we went to university, to hospitals, to many places. We have raised our own awareness of the situation, but we also would like, with your help, to raise the awareness of the world to the situation. There is, we think, a kairos, a moment of opportunity there, which must be grasped for the good of all, for the security, the genuine security, the long-term security of all peoples in that region.
Accompanying the bishops on this Holy Land pilgrimage were representatives of aid agencies such as the Irish charity and development agency Trocara, which has been working in the West Bank and Gaza Strip since 2002. Trocara director Justin Kilcullen.
Our response is on two levels. One would be to face the humanitarian issues that are here, particularly amongst the Palestinian population in the West Bank and increasingly in Gaza, where the situation is becoming very, very serious. And we work with Caritas Jerusalem, our local partner here, and with Catholic Relief Services, our American counterparts, in bringing much-needed basic assistance to those populations. But of course, one also has to address the underlying causes of this. These are issues to do with international law, indeed the breach of international law, and the abuses of human rights that flow from that, violence against communities, the destruction of houses, and so on. And I think it's a very important part of our work that we work with local partner organisations, both Israeli and Palestinian, who are set up and very active in addressing these issues and challenging their own authorities, be it in Israel or in the Palestinian territories, to respect the rule of law, to respect rights, and to educate the population as to what these rights are, that they are able to demand these rights for themselves. So those would be the two main areas in which we're operating.
Let's look first then at getting supplies into the increasingly desperate situation, particularly in Gaza. It's very difficult, isn't it, to get anything but the most basic food supplies across the wall and into these areas.
Well, this is a real problem because while there may be a perception abroad that Gaza is now somehow autonomous because the Israeli settlers have left it, it in fact remains controlled entirely by the Israeli security apparatus, who control those who can go in and out. And in that sense, convoys of food and supplies, what have you, are being controlled continually from outside of Gaza. And there's a constant battle to negotiate the free passage of humanitarian aid into Gaza. And that is something that our partners here in Caritas Jerusalem have to do every day. It's a very demanding task for them, and they have the expertise to do that. We provide the funding and so on that enable them to do that work, and the support and solidarity we can to encourage them to keep doing so, and to know that the international community, particularly the Catholic agencies across Europe and North America, are behind them in this vital work.
What do you think perhaps are the most urgent needs there at this particular point?
Well, while there's always needs to meet people's basic needs, I mean, in reality, what the real need is economic development, because you can't just have people living constantly on handouts. And we need to really campaign actively for the people of Gaza to be able to develop their own economy, that there can be investment there, that there can be access, that they can get in and out, and even that they should have access to the sea and a certain amount of air access, so that they can encourage people to come in. I mean, Tony Blair, I'm sure, is working on that before him. Mr. Wolfensohn, former president of the World Bank, was very strong on the need for economic development in Gaza. But unfortunately, they are caught in a political situation where Hamas have now taken control there, and where there's distrust of the political authority. And I think it's very important that we continue to try and push for that aspect of work, while, of course, we continue to bring in the much-needed basic supplies that people need to get by on a day-to-day basis.
The bishops here and yourself, you've been visiting some of the government officials, Palestinian leaders and Israeli ministers. What do you think international pressure like this can do to somehow improve the situation?
Well, I think it does two things. I think that the Israeli government is very keen to have international approval. They put themselves out there as a democratic country following, you know, the best standards of democracy as we would see in Western countries. And I think these visits help to point out to the Israelis where they are failing to meet those standards, and that they cannot expect the acceptance of the international community if they are to be in continuous breach of international law, the Geneva Conventions, that they act with impunity in terms of their destruction of people's houses, the denial of rights. And this visit here is part of that, for them, you know, making that message clear and telling the Israeli government that we will be talking to our people at home through the churches, through our schools, through the media, and that, you know, Israel's reputation is not high. And if they seek to have international approval, they really need to meet these international standards. At the same time, I think our visit is an expression of solidarity with the local Christian community and with the Palestinian people who are, let's face it, the ones who are suffering most in these circumstances. But also, it's saying to them that they too must work for peace. I mean, peace is made up with both sides. You cannot make peace talking to your friends. You make peace talking to your enemies. And I think the Christian community can play a kind of a bridging role between communities that are alienated from each other. And particularly the Christians in the Palestinian community, I think, play an important role there in being able to bring in this kind of international kind of network, but at the same time being very much part of their own society. And I think that was respected by the Palestinian Prime Minister, whom we met 2 days ago, who spoke very well about the role of the Christian community and its historical role. And I think we saw there an openness and a hunger, really, for them to enter into the negotiations that are now beginning and to try and achieve the peace settlement which has been promised within 2008. And there's a certain amount of optimism that while it won't be completed in this year, that, you know, significant progress can be made. And I think we are here to encourage them and to let them know that we are looking after their interests, while at the same time encouraging them to develop proper democratic systems. And of course, they too must respect the rights of their citizens.
The thing that that struck me most is their basic, their most profound experience is one of being treated as less than human. And they are terribly humiliated by that.
Archbishop James Weisgerber, president of the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, was also making his first visit as part of the Holy Land coordination team. Before leaving Jerusalem, he and I sat down to talk about his impressions and the way in which he and the other bishops can now use this visit to help press for justice and peace in the land where Christ lived.
This happens, going through checkpoints. So many of them have examples, experiences of being taunted and being made to wait at checkpoints simply at the whim of whoever is there, and constantly humiliated and constantly made to feel that they have no power. I didn't know, for instance, that in Ramallah the unemployment rate is up to around 70% or something like that. And these people at the university, Bethlehem University, are wonderfully bright kids with great excitement about life, but nowhere to go. They can't get a job. It's forbidden for them to go to Israel, to Jerusalem, rather, where their jobs are. They can't go there. And so they're completely isolated. And they're all talking about leaving to get a further education, leaving Israel, leaving the state, and coming back. I think that's what most people do. Most people leave with the intention of coming back, but unless there's a solution, why would anybody want to come back? So that's very, very, very discouraging.
It is a real problem here. The Christian community seems to be dwindling away. It's hard to imagine how it can be stopped. And it's very difficult, isn't it, for us here in the West to say, no, you must stay. This is the land where Christ was born. It's important that you stay and witness here. And yet this is the message we're being asked to take back home.
Yeah, and of course, they would all love to stay. Now, we have this new initiative now, the Annapolis Initiative. President Bush's visit to some extent coincided with our own, but there is an awful lot of cynicism, again, and mostly among the youth. The politicians are trying to put the best face on the whole thing, and one would desperately hope that this could succeed, but the people on the ground are not very, very, very enthusiastic or very hopeful in this whole process.
We've been hearing from politicians and diplomats here that this is perhaps the last-ditch opportunity, that if this latest political initiative fails, then it's going to be very, very hard to secure peace in this region. Do you share that analysis?
I would think so, but I can't imagine how the present situation can continue either. You cannot oppress a people and lock them up. Because, what again is very striking here, it's not just a question of trying to control the Palestinians or the Christians. There's also a huge control of the Israeli population. They are not allowed to go into the Palestinian territories. So in point of fact, the government policy appears to be to completely separate the two populations, which of course plays right into this hand of dehumanizing each other. If you have no contact, it's so easy to believe, that every Palestinian is a terrorist and every Jewish person is a tyrannical oppressor. If that's what you want to teach people, this is the best way of doing it. And, I don't know what they're preparing for the future because, children are learning this now. And, if there's going to be a solution, this has to be unlearned. So the wall and the checkpoints and all that control, it's not just a kind of a political or a police sort of tactic. It has great, great ramifications in terms of people's psychology and people's view of themselves and of others. So, it's difficult to know how the problem will be solved now, but it's even more difficult to imagine how this could possibly continue.
There are on the ground a lot of Palestinian and Israeli peace groups, people trying to work across the different communities to break this deadlock, to show a different perspective, a different point of view to young people in particular. What do you think is perhaps the secret? What is the key to being able to change these perceptions?
Well, I think it's contact and dialogue. It's getting to know each other as persons. I mean, that's true for all of us. I mean, in the moment you talk to somebody, I mean, it's a completely different relationship, a different reality. And I think the same thing has to happen here. Now, one of the, I think, the bright spots is there's lots of areas in Galilee, you know, where people are living side by side. Muslims, Christians, Jews, all living together and sharing life, and they've done for centuries. And that's a huge part of the country. It's near Jerusalem and in the Palestinian areas in the West Bank, you know, where we have this attempted control. Well, it's not an attempted control. It's very much a controlling of the population. We spent Sunday at a little village, a Christian village, one of the few completely Christian villages in Israel, by the name of Taibe. And the priest there is an absolute wonder. I mean, he really has decided to take all of the negatives and turn them into positives. And that sounds like a cliche, but he's actually done that. They, you know, they have their own school. They were unable to bring their sick people, particularly their women who were having babies, to hospitals. A number of babies died because they were unable to get medical care. So they started their own hospital. And, I mean, he's created an economy of selling olive oil, all kinds of different, they're making beer, a wonderful beer that's being exported now. They have licenses in Europe. He does not want his community to be economically dependent. They want handouts. They want to make their way, and they're doing it. And it's not just a question then of economic progress or economic self-sufficiency. I mean, there's a spiritual thing behind that. People feel dignity, and the enterprises of the parish hire 77 people. So this is 77 families. So these people will stay. They want to stay. And he says the key is education. And we were there Sunday. Monday school was starting. And he gave a little chat after Mass to the students about the importance of education. That's the first thing. Secondly, he says, is a profession, get a job, a good-paying job. And thirdly, marriage. And then people will stay. And clearly it's working. Now, I think that village, the population has halved over the last 50 or 60 years, but it's stabilized, and I suspect it will grow. I mean, and this is the thing that is, I think, is necessary. But again, one needs a lot of leadership and a lot of hope, and you have it in a charismatic leader, but there are not that many of them around, I suspect.
So the role, perhaps, of the international community, the church in other countries, is to support these kind of people and these kind of initiatives?
Oh, I would think very, very, very much. We're being told to encourage pilgrimages. Again, this is important for the economy. But pilgrimages, not just to see the holy sites, which is an important thing to do, but to visit the living stones, which are the communities. And it certainly has made a huge difference in my life, you know, meeting these people, my understanding of the situation. We've had a wonderful opportunity to spend long times in conversation and in visiting, and I think that is helpful. You know, there's a feeling of being forgotten in a situation like this, and I think the world press, caricatures the Palestinians and doesn't really know who they are. So when they get an opportunity to show who they are and to talk with other human beings, I think they're very appreciative of this.
You're taking all these experiences back home with you. Where do you go from here? What else can you do, perhaps, to try and make a difference in the wake of this experience?
Well, of course, I've come in the fact that I am the president of the Conference of Bishops, so we will certainly share this. It's an annual affair. More and more bishops are coming for this experience. So we as a matter of fact, we are in constant dialogue with the government around these issues. I'm a pastor, first and foremost, a pastor of a diocesan church, and I very much share my life and my experiences with the people. And so, for instance, next Sunday, we have the beginning of the week of prayer for church unity, and it's beginning in our cathedral. All the church leaders of Winnipeg will gather, and I'm preaching, so you can be assured that they're going to get the message. This is why I think it's important that church leaders have this experience, because, I mean, there's so many different things, priorities that we have to look at, but things become priorities when you've had experience of them. And, I mean, this is certainly notched way up in my own understanding and my own heart.
Amongst your own diocese, the people around you, how much understanding, how much awareness is there of the problems over here in the Holy Land?
Well, Winnipeg has a very, very important and strong presence of Jewish people, not large, but very, very powerful. I'm Chancellor of St. Paul's College, which is a small Catholic college in the larger University of Manitoba. And we have a formal relationship with Hebrew University. We work with this and we're very supportive of Israel and the state of Israel and the educational system of Israel. I spent a day there while I was here, while I've been here at Hebrew University, and then 2 days later at Bethlehem University, and I wasn't prepared for that.
We see the political problems and the need for a political solution, the daily difficulties of people here. On a religious level, how much can, for example, dialogue between Christians, Jews and Muslims, how much can this be part of the solution, just as it is part of the problem here?
There are two things. The first thing is religion, Christianity in particular. I was chatting last night with Nazir, a young journalist student, a leader, and he talked about in Ramallah, the parish in Ramallah, a very small parish, but how important it is for them precisely to counter the pressures to feel less than human. It's a place where there's solidarity, where there's community, where there is a deep understanding of their dignity, and I think we have to begin there. And I think also the Christian faith is a faith that is reaching out. I mean, it's not just about me and about how much God cares for me. It certainly begins there, but then I in turn have to care for the other. So I think, you know, the values of solidarity and forgiveness and reconciliation, these are the values that are needed for any long-term solution.
And my thanks there to Bishop James Weisgerber, to Cardinal Sean Brady, Cardinal Francis George, Bishop William Kenny, and Trocara Director Justin Kilcullen for sharing with me their impressions and their hopes during the Holy Land Coordination Group meeting in Jerusalem. On Thursday, Pope Benedict was due to visit Rome's La Sapienza University as part of celebrations marking the start of the academic year. Following a series of protests by a group of staff and students, though, the visit was called off, and instead the Vatican Press Office released the text of the Pope's speech. My colleague Chris Altieri takes a closer look.
The relation of reason to rationality and the reasonability of the Catholic faith were the Holy Father's major themes in the remarks he prepared for delivery during the formal opening of the academic year at Rome's La Sapienza University. Pope Benedict said his invitation to speak as Bishop of Rome sets the tone for his remarks because the Bishop of Rome speaks as the representative of a believing community, which has throughout the long centuries of her existence nurtured and developed a clear and recognizable wisdom in matters of living. The Pope therefore speaks as the representative of a community that carries within itself a great treasure of ethical experience, which is of significance for all humanity. The early Christians recognized themselves in the ancient Greek tradition of philosophical inquiry that rejected magic and superstition and sought the truly divine source of life and order. Pope Benedict continued to say, "The first Christians did not embrace the faith positivistically, nor did they welcome it as an escape from unfulfilled desires. The first Christian," said Pope Benedict, "welcomed the faith as the force that dispelled the cloud of mythological religion and made room for the discovery of the God who is at once creative and loving reason." Pope Benedict went on to say that human nature wants to know. It desires truth. "Truth," said the Holy Father, "is first and foremost a matter of seeing, of comprehending, of theoria, as the Greek tradition calls it. Truth, however, is never merely theoretical." In correlating the Beatitudes of the Sermon on the Mount with the gifts of the Holy Spirit in the book of the prophet Isaiah, St. Augustine affirmed a reciprocity between knowledge and sadness. Knowing the truth is aimed at knowing the good. The Holy Father said, "Truth makes us good, and goodness is true." This is the optimism that lives in the Christian faith.
My thanks to Chris Altieri for that report. That's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.